You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Tuesday morning to you, Mike McMurrin for Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it. That's right, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Yeah, so good morning to you. Hope you're having a good morning wherever you are. Could not start the podcast yesterday, the recorded live version of it yesterday on time, so with apologies. Yeah, and I worked my ass off to get it done. So I get to Camp Pendleton to speak, and I'm speaking down by the airfield, right? Right across the street, for those of you that know where it is. Back behind McDonald's, Base Legal's up there, but you know what I'm talking about. McDonald's right across the street from the airfield. Yeah, back up behind there. It's a black hole of cell service. Not sure why. So it's 7:55. I go to start it. I got like 3 G's worth of service. And I'm like, you got to be shitting me. So I go outside, doesn't get any better. And I'm like, well, fuck it then. I can't do anything till the first break. So, yeah, the best laid plans of mice and men. Yeah, that was my life yesterday. So, anyway, with apologies, because the show yesterday, if you didn't listen to it, make sure you do. Because I shared some things that people had written to me. And the, again, I mean, it's just, this experience is, I talk to friends about it, people, you know, will call me and hear me talking about it, and it's just amazing, and yesterday was no less amazing. Just, you know, young people all across the country that have been through so much and are looking for leaders in their life, looking for a path to make sense to them, and quite thankfully, you know, post-traumatic winning is that. And the more I do it, the prouder I am of it. And again, the reason I do love it so much is because, you know, starting in that day, on that day in 1993, when a helicopter crashed into my company assembly area out in 29 Palms, a day when my gunnery sergeant, Lance Y, walked up to me, and he said, he asked me how I was doing, and because he wasn't there when it happened. You know, it was Monday. You know, we were kicking off 10 days in the field. and he had the log trains, and they had to go out to the ammunition supply point at 29 Palms and pick up the ammunition. We were going to shoot for, you know, at least the first few days of the exercise. And so he wasn't there when it happened. So he comes out, and he walks up to me, and I'm sitting on a couple crates of ammunition, washing blood off my forearm. And he asked me, he said, "How are you doing, Skipper?" And, you know, I said, you know, "I don't really know." And I said, "You know, we've been busy. After the crash, you know, we had to take care of the remains. And, you know, we had to go find body parts. The pilot had been decapitated. And, you know, yeah, we had to go find his head." And so, and we did. And so then you have to sit on it because it's a crime scene, and a coroner from Riverside County had to come out there, which took a while. And so then once the coroner left, you know, we took care of our fallen Marines. And then we sat on the site till the survey crew from MAG 39 came out so they could do their thing in terms of you know, finding out what had happened and why it had happened. So I mean, it was a busy day. I had Marines. I had a sergeant. I want to say his name was Hudnall, but it's not. I could see him in my head, in my mind's eye. He has a mustache. Hudnall didn't have a mustache, but they were both in the tow section of my company. And so anyway, our immediate action drill when we went into an assembly area was, you know, part of the be hard to kill, right? Was, you know, back into one of the crevices. So if you can picture this, it's a wadi is a dried out riverbed in the desert, right? And, you know, the longer ones become the major thoroughfares. And that's what, where we were at a place called Wood Canyon. It opened out, you know, into the next compartment. And, you know, it was big enough for, you know, a company of, you know, between 100 and 150 Marines, you know, to spread out as we did and then do our business. And so so the vehicles backed into the little crevices, you know, that fed into the riverbed. And then they'd take the camouflage nets they had on the side of the vehicles, right, and they would stake those down as part of being hard to see and hard to kill. This sergeant, Hudnall, I'll tell you his name's Hudnall just for the sake of discussion, but he was standing next to the vehicle on a finger that was maybe 10 feet off the ground. So his eyes are maybe 16 feet off the ground. The helicopter flies by, and the skids of the helicopter are 7 feet off the ground. He said he waved at Sergeant Bazzarini, who we would later try to save, you know, 2 seconds before the helicopter hit the ground. And Bazzarini just, you know, sitting there on the side of the Huey, right, in his seat, and Bazzarini waved at him. And then it happened. And so talking to him, because he was struggling. And so my gunny walks up and he says, "You know you're never going to get over this, right, sir?" After he asked me how I was. And I looked at him and I said, "What?" And he said, "You know you're never going to get over this." And I said, "I'm not exactly fucking sure, but I'm pretty fucking sure that the fucking therapist," because I was pissed when he said it, "the fucking therapist says that to the fucking patient right about fucking now, Gunny. So why don't you get the fuck away from me?" And he just looked down at me, and he has big ears, right? And blocking out the sun, 29 Palms, late in the afternoon in September. And he looked at me and he said, "You need to know that." And I said, "Who the fuck told you that?" And he looked at me and he said, "Vietnam guys told me that." He said, "And it's helped me. And I didn't go through anything near like this today." And so on that day, you know, he changed my life. He opened my eyes to what it was to live with traumatic shit. And I thank God that Lance Y was there. Because that advice, while initially sounding very daunting, has been comforting, you know, to me to this day. And when I talk about that, when I do post-traumatic winning, I'm so thankful, right, that he set me on a path to understand this stuff, to be curious about it, right? Because I, you know, as time went by, I wondered, like, well, you know, the Vietnam guys, you know, they're not the brightest bulbs in the fucking chandelier, man. How'd they figure that out? And then I thought, you know, the Vietnam guys probably didn't. They got that from guys who fought in World War II and Korea. Well, where do those guys get it, right? They were just fresh off the farm, dudes. Well, they probably got it from guys who fought in World War I at Belleau Wood, guys who fought in Latin America, and guys who fought in China, everywhere Marines were and everywhere they fought. And so to me, it's this beautiful oral tradition that has existed in the Marine Corps, and that's what post-traumatic winning is, the embodiment, right, of the of this oral tradition. And as I, you know, I'm not a PhD, but I will tell you what, I have PhD level knowledge, I believe, in this stuff, based on coming up on 4 years of interviews with people that have lived through it. And now, the last year, talking to young people that are so devastated by the things that happened to them in life. And, you know, again, met more of them yesterday. I got an email last night that was like, good Lord, you know, from a girl who sat in it yesterday with her therapy dog. And she was taken from her mother and father when she was 3 years old. She grew up with her grandmother and grandfather. The reason she was taken out of her home, it was because it was a meth home, right? Her mom and dad were both meth heads. And, you know, she just tells the story of just death and devastation. And she joined the Marine Corps, right, to, you know, to change her life, to get away, to be a part of something better, right? And, you know, she was raped in the Marine Corps. And so you, she said, I sat there for 3 hours and fought tears the whole time. Thank you. You know, thank you so much for coming today. Thank you so much for talking to me. You know, please don't ever stop doing this. It's so important for people like us that we hear this truth, that we know that there's a path. And that's what Gunny Y, I mean, ultimately, you know, he doesn't take credit for it, but ultimately he's the one that set me on this path. And really what's important at the end of the day, when I do post-traumatic winning, is that these young people, or it doesn't matter what age they are, anybody sits in there, they see a path to a better life. They see a path that they can use, that they can give, as Viktor Frankl says, that they can give their pain meaning. And for people that have lived this for years and years and years, and so painful, such a dark place, it's... I mean, I don't know that you can even put that emotion into words. I mean, can you? You can certainly try, but probably inadequate, right? I would tell you, probably inadequate. And so today I'll do it again, two more times, once in the morning, once in the afternoon. And so it's just, again, you hear me talk about it when I do it, but it's just the most incredible experience. And then you see leaders you know, Scott Benninghoff yesterday and Mike Riggs, Sergeant Major Mike Riggs, and Scott Benninghoff, Lieutenant Colonel. He's a squadron commander. And, you know, you see how committed they are to making a difference in the lives of their Marines, extending their leadership into the personal lives of their Marines. And I think that's, it has to happen, right? It has to happen because, you know, General Furness, you know, talks about better human being, better Marine, better warfighter. If all you concentrate on is the Marine, is performance and conduct counseling, you're going to deal with a lot of destructive behavior. And it's not until, you know, you broaden the lens of, you know, monthly counseling to say, hey, how are you doing in these areas? And they'll tell you. They'll straight up tell you. And then you know, as you make them a better human being, they will absolutely be a better warfighter. They will absolutely be a better Marine. And so, but again, that's not the way we tend to look at it. And a lot of Marines are reluctant to go there with young people. So, and they are dying. That's why they joined the Marine Corps. Not just to be part of that Eagle, Globe, and Anchor, but they believe that they're going to meet people that care about them like that, will develop them as human beings like that. And I think oftentimes we fail them. Oftentimes we fail them because we don't go there with them. And I believe that that's the secret to all of this, is that you know, the loving, steady presence of a strong, knowledgeable leader, not a perfect leader, but a leader that relentlessly pursues winning through failure, through adversity, through all of that, right, is what they're looking for. Because, you know, I don't know, I had this kind of epiphany in the shower this morning, and a vision. If you don't ever hear about post-traumatic winning, you know, what you tend to do with trauma is you put it behind your trauma dam, right? And the water level behind that dam builds up and up and up and up till, right, it overflows the dam, right? And that's when, you know, people's issues start. And the dam cannot hold it any longer. Now, the question is, can you develop mechanisms that will allow enough water through the dam so that the dam can be sustained and life can go on? Or will the dam, you know, burst? And so post-traumatic winning is a way to vent that, right? To create better pipes, to create better, you know, throughput for the dam so the dam can sustain, right? So the dam can sustain. And also, I think, what post-traumatic winning does, it builds a better dam, right? Because it lets more stuff through. It allows you to process it. And then once you learn how to, right, create joyful experiences in your life by touching the lives of other people, by giving your pain, by giving your suffering meaning, as Frankl talks about, then the water level in the dam goes way down, right? You can allow more throughput. And so I believe it's what young people, especially young people affected by trauma, are looking for. And I know that because they come up and they tell me that every day that I do this. Every day that I do this. So yesterday, awesome experience with Marine Wing Support Squadron 372. And so again today with Marines from MAG-39 and Third Marine Air Wing. So looking forward to it. So I had a guest lined up today. Actually, what happened was Alex Hollings was supposed to come on yesterday. Grant Newsham's supposed to come on today. Alex has some family stuff he's taking care of. So Grant went to yesterday, and I didn't have time to get anybody for today. So we'll do the first hour, and then you will be on your merry way. If you did not get a chance to listen to yesterday and Grant Newsham from yesterday, listen to it. It's pretty funny. As always, Grant's insightful, and we talk about Iran, and you get to hear Grant, who's an intel guy, talk about Iran, which is good and interesting. And then Grant had really interesting things to say about the election in Taiwan, in which the Taiwanese candidate, right, anti-mainland China, won an overwhelming victory, right, bordering on landslide, which is interesting given everything that's been written about Taiwan. And so that's good to see. Free people, you know, here's an epiphany and a shocker. They just want to be free. Okay. They don't want, you know, to live in 1984 on steroids. Okay. So anyway, Grant talks about that. But the best part is, I'd had a conversation last week with somebody talked about, you know, the Army pivoting to the Pacific. So I asked Grant about that. Right. And, oh my God. Dude had a few things to say about that. So, which made me laugh. And I made the comment yesterday, had I known he had such emotions about that, I'd have stoked that fire much earlier, much earlier. So in the second hour, if you didn't listen to yesterday's podcast, second hour from yesterday, go ahead and do that. So good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Dedicated again to the leaders of Marine Wing Support Squadron 372 and Lieutenant Colonel Scott Bedinghoff and Sergeant Major Riggs. And again, without their insisting, you know, post-traumatic winning would not be touching the lives of Marines. And so this dedicated to them and all the Marines that I met yesterday. Well done. God bless you. Right. And just keep doing what you're doing. Don't fake it. Don't be afraid to talk about it and live a self-disciplined life. And if you do that and you give, you'll live a life that, that you can't even fathom right now. So this is dedicated to all of you on a Tuesday morning.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, we will check the weather right now. And again, this is about 3 hours and 11 minutes before we normally do it, so take that into account. Currently, it is raining in 45 in Quantico. It's warm on the west coast in the Carolinas anyway. It is cloudy and 63 at Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. It is cold and 29 bomb. It is clear, dark, and 37 degrees. Yeah, my oldest headed out there. Yeah, have your good bag, Johnny boy. Dark, cloudy, and 42 at Camp Pendleton. Dark, cloudy, 73 at Camp Smith in Hawaii. In Okinawa, it's warmed up a little bit. It is dark, cloudy, and 65. My voice is changing. In Afghanistan, cloudy late in the day and 42 degrees in Lashkar Gah. And in the provincial capital of the Al Anbar province, Ramadi, it is sunny and 58. At the home of All Marine Radio, at the corporate headquarters, it is clear and 46 degrees. The wind chill factor sits at 46. Looking for a high of 65 today with mostly sunny skies. 67 tomorrow and rain expected on Thursday with a high of 62 degrees. That is a look at your weather here. Don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it. The one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and soak in the ache of this heartbreak. I wanna drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears. When I reach there, I'll scream, yeah, I'll let it all out. But right now,
one and only Peyton Davis. Yeah. On Tuesday. Let me share with you, it's kind of interesting, the different. Again, I've been doing this now for close to 4 years, and, you know, the people that listen to it, you know, have seen, you know, they know about post-traumatic winning. They know me, and they follow it. And, you know, I think people are invested in it, and they give me advice, and so it's very, very cool experience for me. Let me read you an email, part of an email that I got yesterday, I think. My days kind of blend together a little bit when this stuff happens. I do have a comment on some of the feedback you've been sharing on All Marine Radio. Now, this is somebody who... incredible career as a Marine, incredibly respected as a Marine. You know, I know people that, you know, revere him, right? And whenever I go have dinner with him, I bust their balls like, I'm having dinner with so-and-so, I'm having dinner with so-and-so. And they're like, you're not even worthy to be in his presence. Like, I can't, do you sit at the same table or do you sit on the floor while he sits at the table and eats? Right, to which I, you know, right, there's only one response to that, right? Fuck you, man. And so I'm sitting at the table. Yeah, what's up? What's up? So anyway, it seems that a somewhat common refrain used as a trauma modifier, especially from 0311's infantry Marines, is that I've never been to combat. It appears that there is a feeling among many Marines that the trauma that they have faced in everyday life somehow doesn't measure up to the trauma that they perceive they will experience in combat. To those who think that non-combat related stress is a lesser form of stress and trauma, I simply say bullshit. Raising your right hand doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to go into combat. But all of us will deal with trauma in our lives as we face the death and loss of loved one, the trials and tribulations of parenthood, and the countless forms of everyday life drama. Of all the stories I have heard on All Marine Radio, the most gut-wrenching and disturbing to me was the interview that you did with your sister Peggy about the murder of your nephews. I didn't have the courage to listen to it live when you first put it on. And it took me several weeks before I could bring myself to listen to the podcast. My visceral reaction was based on my own experiences in dealing with the death of my wife. Sitting down and telling my then 11-year-old son and 8-year-old daughter that their mother was dead was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I can only describe the cry that my son let out as a primal wail. And I would never want anyone to hear that sound. As you know, I've seen horrible things in my 3 combat tours. But I would rather face a platoon of ISIS barehanded than live through an experience like that again. I'm willing to bet that you feel the same in relation to your nephews. Heading into combat, there's an expectation that bad things are going to happen. In everyday life, you never know when things might go south. So we need to prepare for life trauma just like we train for combat. Call it pre-traumatic winning. He's the second person that's suggested that, right? And somebody else, I think it was Nancy, said pre-traumatic training. And let me tell you, and when I play the audio of Parker, and let me see if I can find it, and I'll play it right now. Listen to this, all right? And so this is what pre-traumatic training is all about.
Hi, everybody. I'm Parker. I'm a sergeant in the United States Marine Corps. A little bit about me. I grew up playing football, nothing really out of the ordinary, just a high school athlete. Joined the Marine Corps right after I turned 18, shipped off to boot camp. Nothing really weird going on in my life growing up, nothing traumatic whatsoever. After I got this class, my father killed himself, and I had to go back home, take care of all that, you know, whole 9 yards. And I just want to say that when I was coming to get that class, I was absolutely pissed off that I had to be there. Me and my buddies were talking about how much we didn't want to be there, trying to make up excuses on how to get out of that class because we just didn't want to go. And, you know, I didn't know that sitting through that class was going to change my life. So I've got a message for those of you who think you're going to be able to get through the car wash without getting wet. And it's that it's going to happen to you or it's going to happen to somebody that's close to you. And you need to know how to fix it and how to help when it happens. Because as Max says, nobody gets through a car wash without getting wet. And I was one of those people who thought that my life was just going to be fine. And it turned out that it wasn't. Because of this class, I knew exactly what to do when I was faced with a traumatic event. I'm not saying it was perfect, and I'm not saying it was easy, but I definitely wasn't as lost as I would have been without it. So with all that being said, y'all need to listen up, because even if you don't think this applies to you, it's going to.
Yeah, so that's what both Nancy and that last email are talking about. That's exactly right, you know, and some of the statistics that back that up is 83% of the Marines that took their own lives in 2018 had never, ever deployed. Never heard a shot fired in anger. So what's their fucking problem? Well, I have a slide that has about, I don't know, 20 different things. Rape, suicide, right? Violent assault, right? Abusive parenting, death of a loved one, right? And it just goes down this list, you know, death by friends from car accidents. And I say, you know, if you know somebody that's been affected by this, put your hand up. And if you know a second, if there's a second incident, put your other hand up, right? And by the time I go through the list, and again, it's not an exhaustive list. It's just like the major things that, you know, that happen in life. It, you know, everybody's hands are up. And the only people who don't put their hands up are people that don't want to. And I say, look around. Everybody dealing with it. Everybody's dealing with the trauma that comes from life. And that's why they've killed themselves. They, you know, they didn't talk about it. They isolated themselves and didn't see a path to a better life, you know. And so, you know, that's, you know, this thing has evolved a lot. And it's interesting when people who saw it a year ago see it now and they're like, whoa. It's like way denser, way better. And I'm like, yeah, well, now it's all the experience and all the things I've learned again in another year. And there's more precision guided munitions. You know, I talked yesterday about, you know, at the end of it, and I say, let me just explain to you. I've talked to you the path, right? Let me explain to you the person who showed me this, who taught me about the, you know, where giving takes you. So everything I've talked to you about is essentially post-traumatic growth, right? It's you learning from the experience and what it's going to take for you to be better. But let me tell you how you transform your life. And then I play audio from Libby. And so that wasn't in there a year ago. A year ago, it was two goals and 8 commandments, right? Stop faking it wasn't the first commandment. Live with self-discipline wasn't the second goal. And so, I mean, it's so much better now. And it just keeps getting better as more people teach me more things. And it gets denser. You know, and so the challenge for me, honestly, is to continue to find ways to cut time as I insert more content into it, and be it an audio clip or whatnot. And again, with the audio clips, were all designed to be a part of kind of the meter that post-traumatic winning is, and that is takes you up, and I use my sense of humor. And and then play audio that is just gut-wrenching and then designed to be a little bit scarring, traumatic in its own way, so you remember it. You don't forget it, right? And then talk about it, you know, the teaching points, you know, a funny story about, you know, me wanting to kill the laundry guy in Ramadi. You know, and having never had that emotion in my life, you know, my brain says, shoot his fat ass, you know, in digital Dolby surround, my Catholic brain, yeah, says that to me. And, you know, and they all laugh. And I say, you know, I said, no, I'm telling you that, but that's a true story. I didn't make that up. That happened to me. And I laid in bed that night wondering, like, what the hell has happened to me? I've never had a thought like that in my life. Standing there with your rifle over your shoulder and your brain says, you know, my brain, actually, the quote from my brain was, shoot this fat motherfucker. And so, you know, and so there's a meter to it. You know what I mean? Like a play almost. And it is a play. It is a performance. And you take them on this, you know, this kind of 3-hour journey. So the hardest part for me is, as this thing has evolved over now over a year, is all the things that people have taught me, making every point denser and more vibrant and then keeping it under 3 hours, because it's long, you know. But again, I take solace in the fact that, you know, when I talk to Marines about it, they say fastest 3 hours I've ever sat through in my life. So anyway, I'm really conscious of that, and so anyway, we're gonna check the top 5 stories. Well, we'll check the news a little bit before I get out of here today. The you know, and the other thing is the people that tend to listen to this program that have found post-traumatic winning, You know, I believe, you know, are a little bit different. I think they care a little bit more. They have trauma in their lives. They've seen the power of what it is to impact somebody else's life in a positive way. And so, you know, when they get moved, like the email I just read you, I mean, they say incredibly profound stuff, right? And I know that it's stuff that, you know, as somebody who does it, you know, you don't share that stuff with anybody. You share that stuff with people who get it. And so I think those lessons are so important. And so I would never thought my life would be what it is today. And I just thank God for Gunny Y that day, who pointed me in a direction, who opened my eyes a little bit to a world that I didn't know anything about. And then I thank God for, you know, just the experience of broadcasting. And then in between my deployments, as I would bring people on and we would talk, that planted the seeds of All Marine Radio. I really enjoyed talking about the culture of the Marine Corps. I really enjoyed talking about, whether we're talking about the Battle of Fallujah or Marine Corps history, and then talking about, you know, what it was like to come home. And so that was really the thing that I wanted to do in some way, shape, or form, you know, contribute to this discussion of post-traumatic mental health, right? But in my mind, it was post-combat related mental health. And then since I've begun to go down that path, right, I've grown up a lot about it. And I do, you know, and as I was talking about this with somebody last week, and I was talking about starting All Marine Radio and my goal. And in the middle of saying it, a thought popped in my head, like one of those idea things, right, that you see in graphics. As I was saying, and my idea was that I wanted to put pressure, right, southward pressure on all these statistical categories, and that maybe if I could talk about it, I would do that. And the idea cloud popped in my head, the light bulb went on, and said, you've done that. You've had an effect. And I don't rightly know how you put that into words. So we need to check the news. So we shall do that right now. The top story in Early Bird this morning. Headline, U.S. commanders at al-Assad believe the Iranian missile barrage was designed to kill. So much discussed. I don't believe that. So anyway, with all respect to everybody, those munitions are too accurate. The guidance systems are digital. And so I don't believe that. I don't believe that. And there was a story yesterday in Reuters that said that the Swiss embassy in Tehran was used to convey a message from the President of the United States to the Iranians. Do not do that. President Trump plans to divert an additional $7.2 billion in Pentagon funds for the border wall. So that thing continues. Next story, Pentagon mulling cuts to the force in Afghanistan, according to the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley. So what are we doing there? What's the mission? Right? Is that not part of the global fight on terrorism? Are we assuming too much risk there? All of that, right? All of that interesting. If you did not hear when we went over the news yesterday, I think Congress did a great thing when it overruled the Pentagon's plan to limit service members' ability to transfer their GI Bill benefits. And what the Pentagon, what the geniuses in the Pentagon said is, yeah, we're only going to allow that as an incentive to reenlist. So once you're beyond 16 years, right, your retirement's looming, you're not getting out. So we'll take that benefit away from you. Yeah. What kind of shit is that? So I remember reading the story and say, hopefully Congress will look at that and say, yeah. Interestingly enough, another story. Iran announces arrests over downing of the Ukrainian plane. Iran's judiciary said Tuesday, that would be today, that arrests have been made over the accidental shootdown of a Ukrainian passenger plane that killed all 176 people on board just after takeoff from Tehran. The announcement came shortly after Iran's president called for a special court to be set up to probe the downing last week of the plane by Iranian forces. Judiciary spokesman Gholam Hossein Esmaili was quoted by Iranian state media saying that extensive investigations have taken place and some individuals are arrested. They did not say how many have been detained or name them. So, anyway, yeah, nice headline without the details, without seeing somebody in cuffs. Not sure that I'm going to buy that one. From USNI News, U.S. Naval Institute News, a couple headline. Vice Admiral Brown. Future fleet must be bigger, and it must leverage unmanned vessels. How about that? Drones. All the robot people losing their minds when they hear shit like that. Another article. Right. This is the day after, right, the Navy announces, or late last week, they announced that Lieutenant Natalie Combs would face no further disciplinary action. She was a tactical action officer on the Fitzgerald, whose dereliction of duty caused the death of 7 sailors on that ship. It was one of the causes, one of the contributing factors for a collision that they said was absolutely preventable. She's not going to be forced out of the United States Navy. Yeah, you know, everybody makes mistakes, right? Everybody makes mistakes that get 7 people killed. Not a big deal. Headline. Naval Surface Forces looking closely at warfare training for individuals and watch team. This is by Megan Eckstein, who we love. Again, like, we don't have this right yet. So, Vice Admiral Brown, this is another story. He is the commander of Naval Surface Forces and Naval Surface Force Pacific. Quote, I'm very, very satisfied with where we are over the last couple of years. And although I'm not claiming mission complete by any stretch of the imagination, I'm very comfortable with the progress that we've made with everything from our ship handling training, our coursework, and we're doing on our ships. What we're doing with individual officers, she said. He went on, we continue to emphasize the professionalism of our bridge watch standards, our seamanship, and our ship handling. But I'm also bringing that to the next level of our maritime warfare prowess. So the stuff that we did for navigation, seamanship, and ship handling, we're bringing to maritime warfare. On the watch team level, the focus is on fielding new trainers. The Navy has 2 combined integrated air and missile defense and anti-submarine warfare trainers, or CIATS, that became operational last year. The San Diego CIAT was used last January for the first time by 40 crew members from the USS Rafael Peralta, Marine, Navy Cross recipient from the Battle of Fallujah, and the Norfolk CIAT kicked off last summer by training the crew of the future Delbert Black. Those trainers are state-of-the-art, operating on a tactical program with real environments. And quite honestly, when the watch teams go into those trainers, they don't know they're not on a ship. It's that good. The CIAT, though, only runs the AG's Baseline 9 combat system to train ship crews on other combat systems and to add capacity. Brown last year directed his office to invest in 2 on-demand trainers, which are trailers with a reconfigurable system inside that can train sailors for high-end maritime warfare on a variety of combat baselines and configurations. Oh, so those trainers are awesome, but they only work on one set of ships. So anyway, you can see the Navy still fighting, right? Still fighting to get it right with the surface Navy at sea. Another story. 21 Saudi military students disenrolled from training programs after investigators find jihadist material and child pornography. Again, the fallout from the murder of 3 sailors, right, by a Saudi Air Force lieutenant. Quote, while there was no evidence of assistance or pre-knowledge of the attack by other members of the Saudi military or any other foreign nationals who are training in the United States, we did learn of derogatory material possessed by 21 members of the Saudi military who are training here in the United States, the Attorney General said yesterday. The relevant U.S. Attorney's offices independently reviewed each of the 21 cases involving derogatory information and determined that none of them would, in the normal course, result in federal prosecution. However, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia determined possession of this material demonstrated conduct unbecoming an officer of the Saudi Royal Air Force and Royal Navy, Barr said. Quote, the kingdom has assured me that it will review each of these cases under their code of military justice and criminal code. Interesting, because the Saudi judicial system is not exactly concerned about but perpetrator rights. Or if you're not well connected in Saudi Arabia, you don't have any rights. So anyway, USNI News fleet tracker, right? The Nimitz is off Seattle. The amphibious ready group, I think it's 26 Mew built around the USS Bataan, is transiting the Straits of Hormuz, the Suez Canal. The USS America, right, and the Truman Carrier Strike Group are in the North Arabian Sea. The Ronald Reagan is in Yokosuka. The Abraham Lincoln is between Pearl Harbor and Okinawa. I take that back. The USS America looks to be in Okinawa. Or in the vicinity of Okinawa, and it's only the USS Truman that is in the North Arabian Sea. So there's a fleet update, right? Another headline. Bataan Amphibious Ready Group, which is a 26th Mew, is now operating in the Middle East, transiting the Suez Canal. So now you're up to date here on a Tuesday morning. See if there's anything worth reading in Marine Corps Times, or if we're just doing gossip again. Headline, thousands of Marines with a 26 Mew move into the Red Sea. Next headline, mail delivery to military bases in Iraq temporarily suspended to clear a backlog. Well, that's not helpful. We followed the... first the murder, and now the trials and the adjudication of the sentences in the case of United States Army Green Beret, Logan Melger, right, staff sergeant type, who was murdered by a combination of SEALs and MARSOC guys, 4 total, in Mali in 2017. Out of the four men charged in connection to the death of Staff Sergeant Logan Melger, Navy Chief Special Operator Tony Didolf was the latest arraigned on charges of conspiracy, assault, obstruction of justice, burglary, involuntary manslaughter, hazing, and felony murder. So that trial, that court-martial, I believe begins in February. Right? I believe that begins in February. The all right, one more, and we'll check the top five stories in early bird, and then it's time for me to go to hit the road and go do good shit today. Top story in early bird today: number one, the President of the United States authorized the death of Qassem Soleimani 7 months ago with conditions. This is from NBC News. President Donald Trump authorized the killing of Iranian General Qassem Soleimani 7 months ago if Iran increased aggression resulted in the death of an American, according to five current and former senior administrative officials. Let me tell you what, he could have killed him with none of that, all right? He could have killed him with no pretense based on the shit that guy's done. Second headline, thousands of Marines with the 26 Mew move into the Red Sea. Number three, Trump plans to divert $7.2 million from the Pentagon for border wall construction. Four, court rules again to give veterans access to post 9/11 and Montgomery GI Bill education benefits. Amazing. Number five, I mean, honestly, that benefit, right, and the ability to transfer that benefit, they're the most used benefits, you know, in the world. Jim Webb, God bless his soul, right, is the one that drove that. And when we were having funerals all the time, right, all of our Congress people, men and women, were like, yeah, we need to give them every opportunity to benefit in life. Well, now there are not so many funerals. And now not too many people are paying attention. So this little benefit can go away, right? And thank God, right? Thank God that in one case the court, in another case Congress said, "Yeah, we ain't having that." And the way Congress people look at it is, I don't want that used as a bullet against me in the next election, and it certainly would be by some future opponent. Number five, in a quest for 355 ships, U.S. Navy leaders are unwilling to accept a hollow force. Wow. The push to grow the U.S. Navy by about 20% was given a new lease on life, politically speaking, with a renewed push from the White House and the acting Secretary of the Navy. But the fundamental issue is this. The Navy can't track on a significant number of extra ships without more funding. So it always comes back to money. All right, the Iran confrontation. Let me read you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 headlines. Number one, U.S. commanders at al-Assad base believe Iranian missile barrage was designed to kill. I don't agree. Whatever. Number two, U.S. points to, let me tell you, if the Iranians wanted to retaliate when they didn't receive the desired effect, and that's what you were looking for, there's no way you could unleash a whole bunch of shit from all the militias that you control in Iraq. Again, I don't believe in coincidences, right? The Iraqis cured me of that in 2004. So, whatever. Number two, U.S. points to dissent in Iran in wake of deadly drone strike. So, you know, the United States, between the president on his Twitter account, right, is stoking the fires of Iranian dissent. So, again, Iran not in the best place right now. I won't say Iran is it, right? Because I think everybody knows, right? It's not the Iranian people. It's the fundamentalist government that took over that country in the late 70s that continues to hijack that nation. Third headline, four Iraqi troops wounded by rocket attack at Balad Air Base. Number four, Trump says it doesn't matter if Soleimani posed an imminent threat. So this goes back to the Secretary of Defense's comments that he didn't see specific intelligence saying that four embassies were being threatened, which is something the president tweeted or said. And so, again, this shit is all about what Trump said or did not said. You know, whatever. The reality is that dude was a bad dude. The reality is that strike changed, right, the landscape of the Middle East, changed the way Iran specifically is being perceived around the world, changed the power equation, right? So good on top of good on top of good on top of good, and then we'll see it goes where it goes from there. Number five, Trump's top general puts his reputation to the test over Iran. When President Donald Trump's top national security advisors briefed Congress last week on intelligence used to justify killing Iranian General Qassem Soleimani, many lawmakers bristled at the defiant attitude of Trump's team, particularly his top general, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley. Okay. Now, remember, this is a CNN article. So, for what it's worth, right, I don't often read these things. One Democratic lawmaker told CNN they were turned off by Milley's pitch on behalf of the administration, particularly when he insisted that the intelligence was exquisite. The lawmaker argued Milley's rhetoric was divorced from how intelligence is actually assessed. Quote, General Milley went out of his way to defend the intel behind the QS strike as so utterly compelling. Not everyone reacted that way. So anyway, in my opinion, like, if you want to quarrel over that, go away. Number six, Esper, U.S. could strike Iran or proxies were legally available and appropriate. So again, the Vito Corleone, right, warning to Iran. And, you know, again, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Again, you've heard us say repeatedly on this program, whether it's me, Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenney, or whoever's come on, that we all have great respect for Iran's ability to do bad things. And so, we shall see. So far, nothing. But I don't think anybody believes it will stay that way. The question is Iran willing in their weakened state currently to, are they willing to risk more American destruction in Iran, not against their proxies? So we shall see. We shall see. Anyway, on a Tuesday morning in an hour-long show, I'm going to put the interview with Grant Newsham on behind this in case you haven't heard it. That way you could just stay here. So have a great day. I'm headed to Camp Pendleton to hopefully change lives. So if you just tuned in, make sure you listen to this hour. It's pretty cool. I read an email earlier in the hour from somebody who's been a great encourager of All Marine Radio and I think makes an incredible point that I try to make every time I do this. That every time I do post-traumatic winning is there are no brownie points. There is no hierarchy of trauma. That the only way that PTSD comes into your life is through combat, right? And he makes that point about having to tell his 8-year-old son and 11-year-old daughter that their mother was dead. And he uses a phrase that when you hear it, right? I mean, to me, it gives me chills. I don't even know if that's even the right word. It gives me goosebumps. Right, that's the physical reaction I have to it. And if you've ever heard it, I mean, it's disturbing. And the words he uses are primal wail. And if you've ever heard anybody who's so stricken to their heart by tragedy, by grief, and you hear that noise, you never forget it. It's not a normal human noise. And so, you know, I think I associate that noise, you know, which is absolute traumatic tragedy. And his point's, you know, well made. So anyway, you'll get to listen to all of that. So don't touch that dial. The interview from Grant Newsham coming up next. But make sure you listen to this hour. It'll be posted on the internet, on the website. Have a great day on a Tuesday, All Marine Radio. Over and out. Oh, and one other thing. Don't be afraid to go change somebody's life, man. Pay attention. Have a great one. Late.